Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Municipal elections are a few months away in towns throughout the valley and along the I-70 corridor. Newcastle is entering new territory with the possibility of multiple recalls.
And we won't know until the middle of February who will be running against them, but there's a strong organized effort.
Officials and healthcare workers are trying to find ways to fund a new detox center. And if city officials decide to allow private pot clubs in the future, those businesses could be a revenue stream to pay for such a facility. Meanwhile, politics, conflicts, and controversies are alive and well in Basalt.
I hope it's not just about special interests, too.
And the Roaring Fork Transportation Authority is beginning to look at new transit systems, like trams, to deliver people throughout the valley. Capital Reserve funds and aging affordable housing units are woefully behind the amount of money it will require for repairs. Finally, we take a look at how an X Games athlete inspired a local opinion columnist to come out of the closet.
Anytime a high-profile athlete like that comes out publicly, they become a beacon for the LGBT world.
Joining me this week are Jill Beathard, editor of the Snowmass Sun, Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent, and Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News. Welcome to the studio, and Randy on the phone at the Glenwood Post-Independent.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Hello, Randy.
Randy, you've got a lot of, from the I-70 corridor on up, we've got elections coming up in the next couple months. I was unaware of the recall effort in Parachute, that there's two council members that are up for recall. Can you give us a little context of what is going on there?
Parachute had initially not approved recreational marijuana in town, and then with the oil and gas downturn, sales tax revenues were really plummeting. So the council and a majority of the council said, look, this is just our fiduciary responsibility to the town to keep it solvent. We're going to have to approve recreational marijuana stores, and did so. And that launched this recall effort. So council members who are seeking reelection or who are not stepping aside are facing recall. So you have the mayor and two trustees, and then we don't know, and we won't know until the middle of February who will be running against them, but there's a strong organized effort to recall these folks, although we don't know how it's going to turn out, because in the fall, Parachute voters did approve an excise tax on marijuana, so it could be a close race.
How many people are running in the Parachute council race?
Well, we have three people facing recall, and then opponents or people to fill those seats have until February 19 to submit paperwork.
Okay.
So that's not quite finalized yet, and I know it's a really unusual situation, so the town clerk has struggled a little bit to figure out just exactly what rules need to be followed. So we have Newcastle and Silk this year.
Sorry, I get them confused.
of interest in Newcastle, which is a growing town, and just as there's a lot of interest in Carbondale, but in both of those cases there isn't a specific issue and point that's driving people to run as there is in Parachute. In Carbondale, we have some people term limited, so there are three seats up. And Alan Harvey, who is from Aspen, used to be a newspaper editor there, is the only incumbent who's running. So there's a cast of characters, eight people seeking three seats, who will have to sort out who they are and what their motivations are here in the coming weeks.
Do you think there's any particular issue that's making that many people want to run?
I think Carbondale is a town where people are pretty civically engaged, are pretty interested in their particular causes. We don't know of any campaigns. For example, there are a couple of ballot issues. Carbondale, I think this is interesting, is going to ask residents if they want to do a carbon tax, which would be on electricity and natural gas, and then would be used to, you know, for solar power and energy efficiency and to offset the town's carbon footprint. But so far, we don't see any of these candidates saying that they're opposed to that or any other particular thing.
They haven't really come out with any sort of platform or doing it. They haven't done any
stumping. Not yet. They just filed their paperwork, so
right.
We'll be interviewing them and figuring out what they're interested in.
In one of the elections for Parachute, Newcastle, Silt, and Carbondale?
The municipal elections are April 5th.
Speaking of taxes down there, you've got an issue with what you guys want to have, well, some need, feel like there's a need for a detox center in Glenwood or Garfield County. And now there's discussion about who's going to pay for it.
Oh, it's really a difficult thing. There's a large committee of people, Mine Springs Health, city officials, law enforcement officials. The difficulty of finding a location, of getting money to retrofit a building, and then getting $500,000 or so for annual operations of a building has just proved really tough. I mean, there's no question that there's a need for something. We don't have a detox center in Garfield County, so the emergency rooms in Rifle and Glenwood have to deal with folks who aren't really, you know, they don't really face a critical injury. They're just drunk or really high, and they haven't committed a crime that, you know, would put them in jail, and feeling is that the jail isn't really the appropriate place for somebody just to sober up. You know, there's expense associated with that. There's personnel associated with that. There are medical issues. So, and it's not necessarily a criminal offense. I mean, we don't do drunk tanks so much anymore. And I skipped over your initial question. I guess I'm being like a politician. But there's discussion of, well, what tax could we impose to pay the, you know, maybe $150,000 to get started, and that might be a grant, and then $500,000 a year to operate it. And I guess the feeling is now we don't have a sales tax specific to recreational marijuana in Glenwood Springs. We don't have an excise tax on our grow facility. And those are a couple of things that this task force is looking at as a possibility. And, of course, you have to have a vote before a new tax can be imposed. But the feeling is that folks are willing to tax marijuana. It's a little bit ironic because, for the most part, these are people who are drinking, and the task force feels like, well, alcohol is heavily taxed and heavily regulated, and you're going to have a tougher time getting a tax like that passed than a new tax on marijuana.
That is interesting that tax, you know, that it can't go to liquor, actually, another maybe one penny or something, since that seems to be the cause of a lot of these, the drunk tank, I guess. It's not a pot tank, it's a drinking.
Right. And the Aspen Times had a story about how Aspen and the rest of the state are grappling with how to deal with pot clubs. So, you know, right now it's illegal to consume marijuana in public, but you can't smoke anywhere else but your own residence if they allow smoking in your apartment building or whatever.
And, or for tourists, because we had this up in Snowmass this week, that, yes, maybe you can smoke in your hotel room if it's a smoking room. Or
how many of those are there?
That's true. Or if you rent a private condo, yeah.
Right. They have a lot of rules. And, yeah, you had that great story about what happened in Snowmass with them requesting, you know, inquiring about holding a private party
at Turks
at a public establishment. And that was interesting. I think Curtis had a follow-up as well about why it's okay for some of those to go on in Aspen, because they, I guess, they're truly private in nature, I guess, and this party in Snowmass was not proposed to be that way.
Correct. It's sort of a slippery slope. I
mean, it really seems kind of a gray area to me. It doesn't seem real clear what the laws are.
I mean, and Brian Olson, police chief, was very upfront about saying that, you know, this is part of our evolution of pot laws, but probably at some point, Carolyn, we will get to the pot clubs. It does seem to be. They have it down in Englewood outside of Denver.
Yeah.
It seems to make sense. I mean, I've never been to Amsterdam, but I understand that that's kind of how that works.
Yeah.
You just go into a little establishment, and it's like pulling up a bar
right.
stool.
Right, and you know, they serve coffee and food, and that's that could, you take a portion of that entrance fee or whatever you want to call it, or proceeds from those private entities, and you fund a detox center, right?
Yeah.
Has there been any talk among elected officials, Randy, in your neck of the woods about pot clubs?
None.
Right, you guys can't even get past the stores.
I think that would be enough. I'm out here.
Yeah, but they have to be a realist at some point, right. Don't they?
Right.
Well, and I think it's interesting some other cities are allowing this to happen, but they're membership only. Is that correct?
I believe
that's
so.
How they get through that. And then someone came to city council and requested them to consider involving that in Aspen, which makes sense for a place like Aspen. I think because, like we were just saying, where do the tourists go? Like, they're here and they're buying it.
Yeah.
But where do they go where they can legally smoke it? And we don't want them to disobey those laws and be smoking outside or smoking in public where they shouldn't be.
Right.
That's and that would be the case here in the summertime. Anecdotally, we hear a lot about people who get in town in the summer and say, where can I buy pot? And are disappointed, for example, that the stores close at 7 o'clock. at one point, the Glenwood City Council was going to deal with that with its new regulations, but it, I think there was so much pushback on some of the applications that it looked away.
Yeah, I know the city of Aspen, I did a story about two years ago, maybe, or less. And the city was very clear. You know, the mayor and the city clerk said, we're not going to be, Aspen's first on a lot of things. We're not going to be the first to do this. We're going to see how other people do it first and go after that, their models. So.
Well, it's just, I think it increases the safety of people using that and people who aren't using it and don't want to be around it. If
that's a good point.
Someone doesn't know the law and they're smoking in a park or smoking in a bar or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because secondhand smoke, that is one thing that Brian Olson did address. I mean, it can be powerful.
Let's go back to Basalt for a second, politics-wise. There's eight people running for council seats down there, and the mayor is being challenged.
By a former mayor.
Right? Mm-hmm. So you have a little bit of context on that?
A little bit. They kind of recycle candidates in Basalt. There's a couple newbies, but I hope it's not just about special interests, too. Topics like this tend to bring out people who want. And there's those two topics with the pan and fork. Oh, my goodness.
Right. So
wow.
Somebody likened what's going on down there to as controversial as they've seen it since, pick your controversy, the Ritz being built, the fur ban.
Yes.
And it's more contentious than ever down there when it comes to the Willits tax, whether that was going to happen, whether we're going to give, you know, taxpayers were going to give the developer money to finish that out. And then the pan and fork, which the council said no to a citizen petition.
400 people signed that. The attorney, he had a good reason, I guess, to turn it down. You know, it was about the verbiage and such.
Right.
Well, then you work with that. I think the spirit of the petition should have been accepted,
right,
quite honestly.
So the council should have just put, you're saying, put it on the ballot to allow the voters to decide whether or not they should own that piece of property.
Correct.
Well, I think it's a good thing to have a fight about. I mean, that's a really valuable, high-profile, potentially great area to develop. So if you're going to get engaged in local politics, that's a terrific terrific issue, focal point.
Right. And it will be in the debates, I would imagine, leading up to the election.
Oh, I think it will definitely determine the composition of this next council. You know, not only do the people feel like they were ignored, but, you know, there are these potential conflicts of interest, again, that are coming in.
Town manager who
didn't disclose it to this administration. I know he had told a reporter at the Aspen Times that he was the brother-in-law of the CFO of the main developer of Mariner. But I didn't know that, and I've been covering, I've been back in the newspaper full-time for almost a year now. I did not know that. I thought that was very important to come out. And then we have in Scott's story yesterday, though, he mentioned the connection between Manaus, is that how you say that?
Yeah.
The foundation?
Yes.
And then the board, the nonprofit board? Oh, my.
What's going
on
there?
Well, that there, you know, there's not a conflict, but there could be the perception of one, that the group that loaned the money, perhaps the board now is deciding. It's kind of a tangled web, and I'm not exactly sure of the parties, but there's the potential for a lot of conflict there, and I think everybody has to be really upfront with where you're managing their conflicts.
Yeah, and so, you know, continued coverage of this election and the campaigns.
By all of the media, not just the Aspen Times.
We need to be holding them accountable, everybody who's running, about these things.
Yes.
Yeah, so you've got three seats open, and you've got two incumbents, and then you've got four challengers, two of which have served before, and then you've got people like Auden Schindler from the ski company who's vying for the seat.
Yes. It's an interesting cast of characters
and
running, for sure.
The ski company's, you know, just bought a building in downtown Basalt.
They've got a big presence
in that town now. So that could be interesting.
Of all the conflicts, I see that one as the least impactful.
Auden's, he's pretty straight up.
Yeah, and I don't want to...
And already involved in a lot of things, so that doesn't surprise me that he
I think
would
everybody
run for
knows,
council.
Right, and that where he stands on things. I think it's when you have candidates that have a motive that isn't disclosed, and that's where you have a problem.
Madeline, talk a little bit more about this town manager issue with the developer of Willits, because from what I remember, and I could be wrong, did he not disclose it to the city right away?
I believe he did when he was hired 4 years ago or something. That's what was reported. But then it hadn't been mentioned, and we've had a new administration since then. And in discussions, you know, I wasn't there to be present to see if he left the room. I don't believe he did leave the room. He said he didn't participate in discussions, but I think, you know, up in Snowmass, they made Gus Gustafson leave the room for Planning Commission because he was, the architect for Gwen's. He's the architect for a couple projects up there. Very cut and dry. Nope, you cannot be part of this, Gus. I would think that the manager would leave the room given that his wife's sister is married to the CFO of Mariner.
Right. And it should be disclosed in every story regarding that.
Yes, when it's applicable. I mean, not just as an ancillary thing. Oh, by the way, Mike, how's your brother-in-law doing in Kansas City?
No, but, Mike Scanlon, town manager, who is related to...
Correct.
You know, when you're talking about Willits or the development or taxpayer money going to that.
Right. And did that have anything to do with his contract that he negotiated for, a year severance pay if he left? I mean,
These are questions that
should be raised. And
they come up. If you're not going to disclose it, those are the kinds of things that people think about when they realize, we didn't know about that. Why didn't you tell us?
Right. If it's just put out there, then there's no secret agenda and all that discussion. Let's just, be forward and put this out on the table and move past it. But yes, Carolyn, I think whenever it's applicable, it's out, it's mentioned, and then you move on.
I want to talk about transit for a second. Randy, you seem to be coping just fine with your first world problem down there. Based on your editorial, can you just give us a weekly bridge update?
Yeah, I think that the impact early on here is probably bigger than we expected. We have 7th Street, which is north of the river and runs by the restaurant, closed during the day and under the bridge for a couple blocks. They're doing utility work. And then yesterday, they cut the bridge itself down to one lane in each direction to cut some trees underneath it because they're going to take down the existing pedestrian bridge, attach a temporary one to the side of the vehicle bridge, and then build ultimately what I think is going to be a really nice new bridge. And, there are some disruptions with traffic, just sort of a little introduction in a small way to what is going to happen when the bridge itself is closed. And I think the upside of that is that it makes people realize that, hey, this is a real project and it is going to affect us. So people can start to think now and next summer about how they're going to get around when the big deal happens. But right now, it's a little inconvenient. I think the fact that there's so much snow makes it more complicated. But we're maybe jumping into the deeper end a little sooner than we expected.
Yeah, I thought it was, I kind of laughed to myself when I saw the quote from Tom Newland, who's the head PIO, I suppose, for the project, when he said, yeah, there's a delay. It's the first delay of like probably hundreds that I'm going to hear from him saying in the next couple of years. It's just the way these projects go.
Yeah,
so everybody has
to be
patient. I
also think that just in terms of letting people know where there are going to be trouble spots, that some of this early stuff is leading to some good conversations about how the information team and the Post Independent are going to keep people up to date to, you know, hopefully minimize the worst of it.
Right. Well, you know, it was interesting to me at the ACRA meeting the other day that it emerged as a topic, also the bridge, because they're worried about the World Cup finals, which is 14 months out. And they're thinking, oh, boy, we've got the whole world coming here, and there's going to be this logjam in Glenwood, and they won't be able to come up to Aspen for this giant ski race.
Will it be done in 14 months?
No.
No. And in fact, the actual bridge closure is August of 2017.
Okay, so and how long is it going to be closed?
They say 3 months.
Okay.
So
which means
there's
going to be a delay, and so it'll be over the finals.
Right. Oh, boy.
Well, maybe they will have a tram built by then. There was a story in the Daily News that Chad Abraham did that he covered a RAFTA meeting. And RAFTA is now looking at hiring a consultant to look at alternative transit modes. And perhaps, you know, one of the concepts is the intercept lot being the kind of transit hub to take a tramway up to Snowmass or to Aspen. And potentially, I don't see why you couldn't go to Glenwood. It's the newer version of a light rail system that we would all be enjoying right now if we just stopped arguing about it back in the 90s.
I think it's a great idea. Tram? And to use that, well, a tram or even a light rail from the intercept lot into town.
European style
transit,
like every other ski, just about every other ski resort in the world uses some sort of system like that.
Well, and then Telluride, you know, they have that great gondola from town to Mountain Village. I mean, that's worked really well. That was financed, you know, with some tax money. And
again,
yeah,
I mean, Aspen to Highlands to Buttermilk to Snowmass.
Yeah, some option, because it's not working now. And with the low gas prices, I think someone had a story a few weeks ago, and I think that's definitely a contributor to even more logjam right now. People are not riding the bus as much because the gas is so cheap.
Right. The Aspen Public Radio did a very important story. I believe, and one that needs to continue being covered, which is, you know, we've got a serious problem with our affordable housing program up here. It's four decades old. Some of these developments that were built, subsidized housing, they're starting to fall apart. Roofs need to be replaced, siding, insulation, boilers. And these people who own their units have a 3% sales cap on their for sale, you know, homes, so they don't have a lot of incentive to put more money in their capital reserve fund. Therefore, just about every single one of them, there's 1,600 units in the inventory, and a lot of them are facing deficits in their HOA capital reserve funds. And so now the city is looking at about a $16 million bailout is what I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was not in our story is that Councilman Adam Frisch has an idea of there's this other program that didn't work, which was called the Accessory Dwelling Unit program, where
the mother-in-law places, that's what happened.
Right, so large homeowners on Red Mountain and elsewhere could either provide a cash in lieu that would go to the housing fund, or they could build an accessory dwelling unit, you know, a one-bedroom apartment or a you know, mother-in-law unit or a studio, and then rent that out. But it was optional. They didn't have to. It was voluntary. Well, it turns out
nobody did.
They don't want those locals living there on their property. So now
not
they're
even for your nanny or for your cleaner.
Right. So now they're selling that. Now they can sell those. You know, they can opt out of that program by giving money to the housing office, or really the city now. So Adam's proposing that they take that money and use it toward the capital reserves. You're in affordable housing.
Yes, I am.
In a for sale unit.
I am in a for sale unit. I'm not impacted by, because I'm a single family.
You're an
single
RO,
family
right?
home. I'm an RO, but we are in a different association than the one that would be helped by the $16 million.
Right.
I'll just say this, my Burlingame neighbors, they pay very high HOA dues, so I can see where that would be a stretch for them to have to put out any more money. That said, I'm not in favor of a $16 million bailout. Just And I don't consider myself a conservative by any means, but it just doesn't seem the right. I think they should consider, if they're going to do a bailout, do a partial bailout, but maybe let people raise the cap. You know, or let's go to 3.5% a year. The chasm between free market and employee units is huge. So let's notch that up. And I understand that $10,000 on a sale price is a lot, but over 30 years, it's, if you're taking out a loan, it's not a lot of money.
Right.
That would be my... My suggestion.
That's interesting. An interesting situation with the Roaring Fork School District getting into the employee housing business. You know, 10, depending on how well it's built, 10 or 15 years, they're going to have significant maintenance issues that the taxpayers will no doubt be on the hook for.
When you guys do those forums, Randy, it should be a topic that's on the agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. The first one of those is next week, February 3rd in Carbondale.
Where? And what time?
At the 3rd Street Center, I think it's 6:30 to 9.
Affordable Housing Forum.
Yep.
I'd like to talk about X Games. Just started on Thursday. We got a lot of people in town for that. And there was a great column in the Aspen Daily News on Thursday by Wendell Whiting, who's a friend of mine. And it was quite... I'm very proud of him. Oh. It was very inspirational, and it's related to the X Games in that...
And it was beautifully written.
It was.
I think that needs to put out there. It wasn't just someone, you know, putting out burying their soul. It was like, wow, this is insightful, and I think his columns are going to be more compelling in the future now that he got this off his shoulders.
Right. He has basically told his Aspen family, everybody who reads the paper, and his friends, and now everybody who listens to the radio, that he is, in fact, gay. And he was inspired to come out because of Gus Kenworthy, who's an athlete in the X Games. And so
Olympic silver medalist, too.
Right. So I don't know if anybody was shocked when Gus came out. Madeline, did you edit Wendell? Talk to him?
Yes.
Did you talk to him about it at all?
He sent it in, and I had a heads up that it was coming, and I was just taken aback by how he... was so honest in it. And it also struck me as very sad that in this day and age that's still an issue to come out to be gay in a community. But, you know, I remember not telling my parents for a long time I was living with my boyfriend. So I guess that we all have our thresholds of honesty and such. But good for Wendell for doing that. And for anyone else who feels they can't be honest with themselves and honest with their Aspen family, come on out.
What was the reaction, do you know?
It's been huge on the website Thursday morning, and I expect it's going to continue to.
Do you have any idea what the reaction was when Gus came out as far as the world of
sports?
Yeah.
Well, I think that there was, it was just like that first football player who came out, too, that there, mm-hmm. I think with skiing, there's a little bit less of a stigma, but still.
Right. There's less machismo.
A little bit. Well, there is that action thing, yeah. But I'm sure it was shocking.
I think anytime a high-profile athlete like that comes out publicly, they become a beacon for the LGBT world. Yeah. I don't know that it should matter that much, but it seems that they kind of shine a light on these issues and make it okay for more people to go public with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, thank you for taking the time, and have a good weekend.
Great to be here.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, Joe Bethard, editor of the Sonoma Sun, and Randy Essex, editor of the Glenwood Post-Independent. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.